We are so glad you've joined us today for our Tuesday broadcast of Abiding in the Word with Dave Love, Senior Pastor of Calvary Castle Rock. Today we are continuing our study in the book of 2 Samuel. So let's listen in now to Pastor Dave.
Your trials will be over.
Let's go to 2 Samuel chapter 19. So up to this point we have seen David, who is the king of Israel. We have seen his son Absalom rebel against the king, steal the hearts of the people, and then march into Jerusalem to take the throne. David has to leave. He goes across the Jordan River to a place called Mahanaim, and Mahanaim, I should say. And so he kind of holds up there. Absalom comes with his troops. There's a fight there in the woods of Ephraim. David made it very clear that if you're going to go out and fight, make sure that you do not harm Absalom, his son. And so the battle goes by way of David and his troops, even though David stayed behind the walls there at Mahanaim. And so Joab goes out. He hears from one of his commanders that they found Absalom caught in a tree. He says, "Why didn't you kill him?" And he says, "Well, you know why. We heard what the king says, that no one should lay a hand on him, no harm should come to him, and we're not about to disobey the king." But Joab does, and he throws three javelins into his heart, and he kills him. And so they send a runner to David. David gets word that his son Absalom is dead. And so here in chapter 18, in verse 33, it says, "And the king was deeply moved, went up to his chamber over the gate and wept. And as he went, he said thus, 'Oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, if only I died in your place, O Absalom, my son, my son.'" David could not take joy in the victory. All he could think about was his son here. His son had died. David says that he would have traded places with Absalom. I don't know a parent that wouldn't trade places with a dead son or daughter. There's no greater grief that a parent can go through than the death of one of their children. And David's no different. His son, he has memories of Absalom when he was a little boy. You know, whenever you're out and about and you see of some tragedy that someone has done, we're about to, you know, start the trial here of the theater of the shootings that went on there. But that young man, as I will refrain from saying his name, that young man was somebody's son at one time, someone's pride and joy at one time, that they were just thrilled the moment that he uttered the words, "Daddy, Mommy," whatever it is. When you're out on the street and you see somebody who's homeless, when you see a prostitute, when you see, and you can think of anybody in society, they used to be someone's pride and joy at one time. Someone's little boy, someone's little girl. And that's sometimes hard to understand. But even when they grow up and they do something very, very tragic, their parents still remember them when they were a little child. And so if something was to happen to them, even if it's justice, they're still going to grieve for their child. David has a very rebellious son by the name of Absalom. And guess what? He died. But he's still sad about it. And I would submit to you, is it possible? Because when David found out about that his son by Bathsheba died, he was in mourning. But then once he found out that his son had died, he gets up, he takes a shower, he cleans himself up, and everybody asks, "Well, why are you doing this?" And he goes, "Well, because I know that that this child can't come back to me, but I know that I will go and see him someday. Thus telling me where all little babies go when they die, to a place where the righteous are going to see them again." And yet David is very, very upset here. And I just throw this out here because I don't know. But is it possible that he's grieving so much because he doesn't know if Absalom's going to go to the place of the righteous dead or the unrighteous dead? Because I can't pick and choose there myself. I don't know where Absalom went. I don't know if I can make a case for one place or another. Where with Saul, I do know. Because Samuel says, today you will be with me, you and your son. And we know where Samuel went, to the place of the righteous dead. And is it possible that David is grieving so much because he really doesn't know the state of his soul? I would have no doubt that David has many regrets over his son Absalom. All those years in Geshur as well, as back in Jerusalem, and yet not once reaching out to make amends with his son in order to have some sort of renewed kinship or relationship or fellowship with him. And so this is where we leave David. And so here in chapter 19, verse 1, it says, "And Joab was told, behold, the king is weeping and mourning for Absalom. So the victory that day was turned into mourning for all the people. For the people heard it that said that day, the king is grieved for his son. And the people stole back in the city that day as people who are ashamed steal away when they flee in battle. Instead of coming back joyful in victory as they were doing at first, David kind of made the people feel ashamed and of what they have done. David turns the military victory into an emotional defeat. A father needs to grieve for his son. There's no question about that. Can't overlook that. And he even needs to overlook the sins and mistakes of his son there as well. But kings and leaders are still called to lead. On October 10th, 1950, Sir Winston Churchill was introduced at the University of Copenhagen as the architect of victory of World War II. Churchill replied, "I was only a servant of my country, and had I at the moment failed to express her unflinching resolve to fight and conquer, I should at once have been rightly cast aside." That's leadership right there. Saying there's a time for grieving, and then there's a time where I have to put that aside and I have to lead, I have to lead, I have to lead. David the father is also David the king, and he still had his throne because of the brave soldiers that fought for him at their own personal risk. They put their own personal interests aside for the good of the nation. David wasn't sacrificing anything more than they sacrifice. Verse 4, "But the king covered his face. The king cried out with a loud voice, 'Oh, my son Absalom, oh, Absalom, my son, my son.'" David was too upset to see what his actions were doing to the rest of the people. Verse 5, "Then Joab came into the house to the king and said, 'Today you have disgraced all your servants who today have saved your life, the lives of your sons and daughters, the lives of your wives, and the lives of your concubines. In that you love your enemies and hate your friends. For you have declared today that you regard neither princes nor servants. For today I perceive that if Absalom had lived and all of us had died today, then it would have pleased you well. So Joab confronts David and rebukes him for his insensitivity towards the officers and the people. "It appeared," Joab says, "that you would have been happier if we had died and he had lived." And indeed, it does kind of look like that, no question about it. "And in order to salvage any remnant of morale or any of these people following you ever again, you have to do something right now, or things are going to be worse than when Absalom was running you out of town," is what he's telling them here. And so he says, "Now therefore, arise, go out, speak comfort to your servants, for I swear by the Lord, if you do not go out, and not one will stay with you this night, and that will be worse for you than all the evil that has befallen you from your youth until now." And so Joab is fearing that those who came with him across the Jordan and everything else, these people that are so fiercely loyal to him, he's not even going to have that when the day is over if he doesn't go out and address the people. So it says, "Then the king arose and sat in the gate. And they told all the people, saying, 'There is king sitting in the gate.' So all the people came before the king, for every one of Israel had fled to his tent." Now, I want to say something here. I want to say that I completely get where David is coming from. I completely understand his loss of his son. I think that that him listening to Joab was a good thing on his part. He didn't fight that. He realized what he was doing. He realized the deep anguish and the pain that he was in. And somebody who can speak reason came to him, and he received it and went and did what he needed to do, even though he was hurting so tremendously. And he did put aside his own personal feelings of what he was going through for the good of the people. And I think that that was a huge victory for David, to the point where I think that is what launched what he was able to do from here on out and be able to rally the people again, which I don't think he could have done if he didn't go out to the gate and minister to the people and the army that fought for him. And so it says, now all the people were in dispute throughout the tribes of Israel, saying, so it kind of goes from that scene of David ministering to the people at that point. What we're about to read right here is probably no doubt many days later, maybe weeks, okay, that once the word got back that Absalom died, by the time that some of the tribal leaders were able to get together to be able to say what's being said here in verse 9, that I would say probably days, if not weeks, have gone by. And so it says, now all the people were in a dispute throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, the king saved us from the hand of our enemies. He delivers from the hand of the Philistines, and now he has fled from the land because of Absalom. But Absalom, whom we anointed over us, has died in battle. Now therefore, why do we say nothing about bringing back the king? So in other words, what they're saying here is that, look, there are those of us of the tribes of Israel, we backed Absalom. That didn't work out so great, all right? And so they're thinking at this point, they begin to reflect back, and they're going, you know what, David wasn't such a bad king. You know, David is the one that delivered us from all our enemies. He's the one that unified all the tribes. He's the one that expanded our boundaries. He's the one that brought prosperity here. You know what? We anointed Absalom, and look what he did. He died in battle. He never even won one battle. And so what do they say? Why do we say nothing about bringing back the king? And so what are they saying here? Said, let's bring back the king. So David's going to hear back from some of the tribes, but he doesn't hear back from his own tribe, Judah. So in verse 11, it says, so King David sent to Zadok and Abiathar, the priest, saying, speak to the elders of Judah, saying, why are you the last to bring the king back to his house? What that tells me is that he's already heard from some of the other tribes, okay? And he's wondering, how come my own tribe hasn't gotten a hold of me yet? Why are you the last to bring the king back to his house, since the words of all Israel have come to the king, to his very house? I've heard from everybody else. You are my brethren, you are my bone and my flesh. Why then are you the last to bring back the king? I like this. David's still not moving. He's not going to move until he hears from Judah. He's heard from the other tribes. I believe that David is, before he returns to Jerusalem to retake the throne, I think he wants unity. I think he wants unity among the tribes. I think he wants a united people. The old prejudice, the animosities need to be buried. The nation needs to heal. We need to be united under one king. But he's heard from everybody except his own tribe, Judah. So David sends a message to the two priests, as mentioned here, Zadok and Abiathar. And so he's basically asking them, I want you to go contact the leaders of Judah. And let me know what's up. And why are you not sending messengers asking me to return like the other tribes? So, verse 13, and say to Amasa. Now, who's that guy? Remember that guy? He's the one that was the commander of the army of Absalom. Also David's nephew. Also Joab's cousin. Because he is the son of Abigail, who is the sister of David. Not Abigail, his wife, but Abigail, his sister. So, Amasa, say to Amasa, the commander of the army of Absalom, say to Amasa, are you not bone and my flesh? Because he's his nephew. God do so to me and more also if you are not commander of the army before me continually in place of Joab. What is David doing right now? I'll tell you what David's doing. I believe that weeks have gone by. I believe that David knows that Joab disobeyed his direct order when it came to his son Absalom. And I think that he realizes that he sees this time and time again, that when it comes to Joab, he always does what's right in his own eyes. And he doesn't follow instruction. And so he wants to replace him. And he's going to replace him with a man that was his enemy. Thus doing what? What does that tell everybody else when he says, and I want Amasa to be my commander? I would submit to you what it tells everybody else is that he's pardoning all officials. He's pardoning everybody that took that that went on the side of Absalom for the unity of Israel under God. I think Joab was always taking matters in his own hands. We see this with in 2 Samuel chapter 3. He did this with Abner, if you recall. Abner was with Ishbosheth, the last remaining son, or the next in line son, I should say, of Saul. And so Abner goes to David and says, look, I'm going to hand over the rest of the kingdom to you, meets with him in Hebron, makes a covenant with David. David makes a covenant with him, say, go in peace. Joab wasn't there at the time. Abner goes off. Joab gets wind of what's going on. He sends messengers, says, hey, Abner, you're supposed to come back to Hebron. Abner's saying, okay, probably the king wants to see me again, comes back, and what does Joab do? He stabs him there at the gate of Hebron and kills him. To which David has to be able to send out messages himself saying, I had nothing to do with this, and makes a great a funeral for Abner, mourns for him, to be able to show the people that he was innocent of this. I had nothing to do with it, and this is all that blood is on Joab, he says. And so he directly disobeyed David by killing Abner. He directly disobeyed David again by killing his son, and we're going to see him disobey here next chapter. And so he sees what's going on here, and he says, I'm going to replace him with Amasa. Since the other tribes for David are coming back, Judah, where are you in all this? In verse 14, so he swayed the hearts of all the men of Judah. David did with his messengers going out and talking to him, telling him what he's going to do with Amasa, just as a heart of one man, so that they sent this word to the king, return you and all your servants. So now everybody's unified. Come on back, come on back, come on back. So then the king returned, came to the Jordan, and Judah came to Gilgal to go to meet the king, to escort the king across the Jordan. So we're going to meet three different people here with the rest of the people here that are coming over to meet him. We're going to meet Shimei again. We're going to see Ziba is there. We're going to see Barzilla. We're going to see this guy. And we're going to notice that it, and Mephibosheth, I should say, and we're going to see it doesn't, it goes in order with Shimei, but then Mephibosheth is actually later, and Barzilla is actually before meeting Mephibosheth, but they have him in reverse order, and it's a good question of why that is, okay, that we'll see here in a moment. So in verse 16, it says, Shimei, the son of Gera, a Benjamite, who was from Bahurim, hurried and came down with the men of Judah to meet King David. And there were 1,000 men of Benjamin with him, and Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, and his 15 sons and the 20 servants with him. And they went over the Jordan before the king. Then a ferry boat went across to carry over the king's household and to do what he thought good. Now Shimei, the son of Gera, fell down before the king when he had crossed the Jordan. So Shimei the Benjamite, he's going to have 1,000 of his kinsmen with him. Ziba, the land manager for Mephibosheth, was also in that crowd along with Ziba's 15 sons and his 20 servants. And they're going to cross over to the river to meet David, King David, on the western shore and then ferry him across onto the eastern shore to be able to then go into Jerusalem to escort him over there. So someone obviously built or had a ferry boat there or whatever, to bring David across so he wouldn't have to go into the river. And so Shimei meets David on the western side of the Jordan. He falls down before the king and he begs for mercy. And he says, then he said to the king, do not let my lord impute iniquity to me or remember what wrong your servant did on the day that my lord the king left Jerusalem, that the king should take it to heart. Now, a couple things here. For one, Shimei not only is repenting, not only is asking for forgiveness, but for the first time ever is calling David his Lord the King. Whereas before, he was a bloodthirsty man. And that allegiance that Shimei had before was with Saul. And so now he is actually calling him king. "For I, your servant, know that I have sinned. Therefore, here I am, the first to come today of all the house of Joseph to go down to meet my lord, the king." Shimei knew his insults, throwing stones, was a treasonous offense, deserving of death. He knows things aren't going to look good for him when David comes back. He knows what it is he has to do. He has to ask forgiveness. He understands that his sin is worthy of death. I would submit to you that every single one of us is Shimei. Our sin is worthy of death. And unless you go to the king, Jesus himself, and ask forgiveness of your sins, you will die in your sin. We have been treasonous with the Lord. And we need to humble ourselves, and we need to ask forgiveness. And guess what's going to happen? Verse 21. Hopefully verse 21 doesn't happen, but that's said first. "But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, answered and said, shall not Shimei be put to death for this, because he cursed the Lord's anointed?" I would submit to you just for the moment that Abishai represents Satan, who is constantly before the throne, accusing us before God. And David is a type of Jesus. And David said, what I have to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah, that you should be adversaries to me today. Shall any man be put to death today in Israel? For do I not know that today I am king over Israel? Therefore, the king said to Shimei, you shall not die. And the king swore to him. Again, by pardoning Shimei, I believe that David was pardoning all those who supported Absalom. I think he's displaying that before everybody. Today's not a day of revenge. It's a time of healing. It's a time of bringing the nation together. Now, I just want to quickly follow the life of Shimei here, okay? Go over here to 2 Kings. David is dying, and he brings Solomon to him, and he says, there's a couple loose ends I want you to take care of. And one of the things he says is in verse 8. He says, "And see, you have with you Shimei, the son of Gera, a Benjamite from Bahurim, who cursed me with a malicious curse in the day when I went to Mahanaim. But he came down to meet me at the Jordan and swore to him by the Lord, saying, I will not put you to death with the sword. Now, therefore, do not hold him guiltless, for you are a wise man and know what you ought to do to him. But bring his gray hair down to the grave with blood." So David is still David. Okay? I believe that Solomon kind of understood what David was saying here. Look, I might have forgiven Shimei. I might have said, okay, all is forgiven. But there's still something about Shimei that doesn't set well with David. Okay? And he's basically saying, keep an eye. Keep an eye. And if you need to, yeah. Bring his hair down to the grave. Gray head down the grave. Never can the bows of darkness, neither death nor even life.
Let nothing ever separate. That completes this Tuesday edition of Abiding in the Word with Pastor Dave Love. Join us Wednesday as we continue our study in the book of 2 Samuel. If you live in the area of Castle Rock and are looking for a church to call home, be sure to come by and visit with us. We meet Saturdays at 5 p.m. and our Sunday service times are at 9 and 11 a.m. A combined junior and senior high class meets at 5 p.m. on Saturday evenings. On Sunday mornings, high school meets during the 9 a.m. service and the junior high meets at the 11 a.m. service. Our young adults ministry, Arise, meets every Friday at 6:30 p.m. at Calvary Castle Rock. Child care is offered for all of our weekend services. Calvary Castle Rock is located right off of I-25 and East Wolfensburger Road, directly behind Jack in the Box and the Shell gas station. For more information about us or this radio ministry, please visit our website at calvarycr.com or download our free mobile app from the Apple App Store or Google Play. You can also call the church office at 303-663-2514. We are so blessed you've joined us today. Until our next time together, we want to encourage you to always be abiding in the Word of God.